president has made it clear that it is not part of his agenda to do oil and gas exploration in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
The new Interior Secretary addresses ANWR from the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 6th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the Department of Law says it mishandled the prior convictions of the man accused in the Mountain View murders.
I've undertaken a review with senior management here at the department to make sure these mistakes are not repeated.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com, and by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The U.S. Justice Department is expected to appeal a judge's ruling that overturned the suspensions of two federal prosecutors over their handling of the Ted Stevens case. Attorney General Eric Holder says he does not agree with the judge's decision. He says he expects justice will appeal that decision to the Merit Systems Protection Board. Holder's comments were in response to questions from Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski during a subcommittee hearing in Washington, D.C. An administrative judge in April reversed the suspensions of federal prosecutors who allegedly failed to provide evidence to the defense in Stevens' corruption trial. Judge Benjamin Gutman found the Justice Department violated its procedures by having a member of its management decide the case, but he did not address whether the prosecutors committed misconduct. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell sat before the Senate Energy Committee today, her first time since being confirmed for the job nearly 2 months ago. Lawmakers threw questions on home state issues at her, which they'll likely do throughout her tenure. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, she addressed two key issues in Arctic oil and gas development, the coastal plain of ANWR and legacy wells in the NPRA.
Secretary Jewell looked decidedly more governmental this go-around, showing up in a standard-issue D.C. business suit. She mostly stuck to script and did not divulge too much information and show too much candor, but she did step forward with her opinion on Arctic oil and gas drilling. Senator Lisa Murkowski asked Secretary Jewell whether the Fish and Wildlife Service's final conservation plan for ANWR will include a development plan for oil and gas. Secretary Jewell answered clearly and succinctly.
The president has made it clear that it is not part of his agenda to do oil and gas exploration in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and I support that position.
As a member of the cabinet, Jewell is expected to defend the president's position. It would take an act of Congress to open ANWR up to drilling. In his most recent budget, President Barack Obama proposes using money from onshore leases to help clean up legacy wells in the National Petroleum Reserve. That's a plan Senator Murkowski does not support.
Monies that would be going to the state of Alaska and the residents of the North Slope are going to be choked back. That's not appropriate.
The president's budget is far from law, so that plan is not in practice yet. And there's no sign in Congress the two chambers will agree on a budget resolution anytime soon. The wells were drilled by the Navy and the Bureau of Land Management between 1944 and 1982. Lois Epstein, who directs Arctic policy for the Wilderness Society, says there are more pressing wells to plug in the lower 48, wells closer to large populations of people.
There are some that do need some remediation. Interior has been making some progress on that, but it's extremely expensive to do so in the National Petroleum Reserve. It's very remote, hard to get equipment there, and frankly, there aren't many people nearby who are actually at risk.
For her part, Secretary Jewell says she's committed to capping the leaking wells in the NPRA, but Congress needs to do its part and find the money to do so. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Interior Department's top oil leasing official is in Alaska. Acting Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management, Tommy Beaudreau, heads to Barrow tomorrow to hear what people have to say about Arctic leasing. He got a preview today in Anchorage. APRN's Steve Heimel was there.
It was called a listening session booked in the Anchorage Assembly Chambers for 3 hours. But Beaudreau, born and raised Alaskan, looked over the room and said he was pretty sure on a beautiful spring day that the formal comments wouldn't go that long, and they didn't. At issue was the report on Shell's botched exploratory drilling season last year and what the standards ought to be for the future. Comments ran about as expected. ConocoPhillips said they wanted more regulatory certainty. The Sierra Club said Arctic waters are too vulnerable to drill in at all. And the Northwest Arctic Borough complained about being left out of the process, pointing out that migratory animals don't stop migrating at the lease sale area's border. It was all over in about an hour, and then Beaudreau said it was time for informal comments. The industry executives in attendance didn't have much prepared for that part. Shell's Luke Francis wanted to know the timetable for putting new standards into effect. Beaudreau said they aimed to have them out for comment by the end of the year. The Wilderness Society said any more lease sales planned for the Arctic ought to be put off. Beaudreau plans to stick with the current five-year plan.
We've designed in the five-year plan a targeted leasing strategy that's going to require a lot of work with a host of stakeholders, and that process is already underway, and you'll see more on it in the coming weeks.
The five-year plan doesn't call for any more sales in Arctic waters until 2016, the last year of the Obama administration. Daniel Inulak Lum, a former Barrow tour guide now working for the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, decided to add some informal comments to his formal ones. He said at least the feds ought to require the industry to prove it can clean up a spill, something Lum does not think possible in Arctic conditions.
The emperor has no clothes. There is no spill response. It's a farce. They can't even set boom in icy waters. Small pieces of ice break boom. Rough waters, it doesn't work well.
Beaudreau said the standards will likely start with those used for Shell. He said they worked. Shell simply was not allowed to drill down to hydrocarbons without a spill response barge on hand, and that barge was required to have a containment dome to cap any blowout. The listening session was over well before the time was up. The comments may have contained no surprises. But the acting assistant secretary said he got something out of it anyway.
I think what we heard today from across the spectrum, and we did get the entire spectrum today, was a lot of passion and a lot of sincere belief and strong feeling across the board. And so it is gratifying for me to hear directly from people who speak with that passion and that conviction, and we do take it very seriously.
And he's likely to get another dose of passion in Barrow, where so far the spring bowhead whaling system has not been good. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Will Shortz takes on a new type of challenge.
My ultimate goal is to be national champion for my age, whatever age that is.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922, on the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
Alaska's Attorney General held a press conference in Anchorage today to admit that the state made a mistake in how it handled past cases involving Jerry Active. Active is accused of killing a Cambodian-American couple and sexually assaulting their 2-year-old great-granddaughter and a 92-year-old great-great-grandmother in late May. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
Jerry Andrew Active had a history with the law. His first charges were in 2007, when he was 18. They involved furnishing alcohol to a minor in Togiak, where alcohol is banned. That's a Class C felony. He pleaded guilty in exchange for a suspended sentence and got 3 years probation. But after he committed his next crimes, which included attempted sexual abuse of a minor, that felony conviction did not show up in a database authorities used to check his criminal history. Attorney General Michael Garrity says that if the database had been up to date, Active could have gotten more jail time.
In the end, the Department of Law, the Department of Corrections, and the sentencing judge failed to identify Mr. Active's prior felony conviction for purposes of calculating the applicable presumptive sentencing term.
Active, now 24, is charged with killing a Cambodian-American couple who were babysitting their great-granddaughter at their home in the Mountain View neighborhood, and of sexually assaulting the 2-year-old, along with her 92-year-old great-great-grandmother. He faces additional charges for punching both of the 2-year-old's parents, including her pregnant mother. Active had two more brushes with the law in 2012 and 2013. He was released from the Anchorage Correctional Complex on May 25th, the day he's accused of committing the crimes. Garrity says it's hard to say if a longer sentence would have prevented Active from committing the crimes, but because of the mistake in his sentencing, the Alaska Department of Law is reviewing policies and procedures.
I've undertaken a review with senior management here at the department to make sure these mistakes are not repeated. Even before this crime occurred, I had ordered a review of the department's plea negotiation policies, and we've been meeting for a number of months to review those policies and those practices, with a particular emphasis on domestic violence and sexual assault cases.
If convicted of all the offenses, Active faces a minimum sentence of 171 years in prison. If convicted of the charges, Active also faces lifetime registration as a sex offender. His sentence would be determined by a judge who's required to consider the seriousness of the crimes and the offender's criminal history. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Community support has been pouring in for the Mountain View couple who came home to find Jerry Active in their house on Memorial Day weekend. Last week, an event for the family at the Northway Mall in Anchorage raised nearly $25,000. It was organized in just a few days by an Anchorage woman who didn't know the family but wanted to find a way to help. Anchorage Daily News columnist Julia O'Malley has her story.
When Miriam Ahrens encountered a news story on Facebook about the killing of an elderly couple and the sexual assault of their great-granddaughter 2 weekends ago, she got a sick feeling in her stomach.
It's one of those things that when you come across, you know, it kind of makes you want to just tune out of the world, like live in your own bubble. Like my initial thought was I should just get totally off of Facebook and stop reading the news.
Ahrens is pregnant with twins, due in 2 months. The day she read the story was a Sunday. Her family gave her a baby shower that day. It made her feel surrounded with love, but what she'd read gnawed at her.
I saw some parallels between me and the family. Like, the mom is pregnant. I found that out. She has 2 toddlers, a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I have a 3-year-old son.
The next day, Memorial Day, she started thinking about organizing an event to raise money for the family. She'd never done anything like that before. She had no idea how to even contact them.
I said to my husband, Joe, do you think it would be crazy if I like put on like a fundraiser or like a spaghetti feed? He said, yeah, I think it might be crazy. You're really pregnant and, you know, maybe somebody else in the community will step forward.
But a friend suggested she get in touch with Mao Tosi, a Mountain View community organizer who also manages the Northway Mall. She contacted him on Facebook and he wrote back right away. Let's do it. Tosi suggested they have the event in 2 days at the Northway Mall. Ahrens set up a Facebook page and blasted it out on her social networks. Within hours, hundreds of people were following.
From there, it just kind of blew up, I guess.
It turned out a lot of people felt like Ahrens. They wanted to do something. Money started pouring in online from all over the place. The donors were doctors, church people, radio personalities, laborers, corporate executives, tattoo artists, and strippers. Wednesday night, the parking lot at the Northway Mall filled with people, hundreds of them. There was music and dancing. Aaron says it was a cross-section of Anchorage.
It was really awesome to see so many people come out. I was surprised. And people really dug deep into their pockets, you know. And everybody was getting their dance on, too. It wasn't just like, you know, a certain, you know, kind of person. It was like little kids were dancing and grown-ups, and it was really cool.
A leader in the Cambodian community introduced Aaron to Vaughn and Lisa Sang, the parents of the 2-year-old. She hadn't planned on meeting them. With everything they had gone through, she didn't want to impose. But when she saw them, emotion washed over her.
They said that they were really grateful and everything. And after knowing like what they've gone through and everything, I could see stress etched on their faces. and heartache, too.
When the event was over, Aaron's and Tosi had raised $23,000.
I texted him that number that night.
What did he say?
He texted me back, OMG. Yeah.
And how did that feel to be able to tell him that you'd raised so much money?
It felt really good I just felt really good to know that I was, like, helping them in some way.
About $2,000 has come in since then. Von Seng says the money will cover funeral expenses for his grandparents. He says his daughter is recovering, but the fallout from the violence hasn't stopped. His great-grandmother is at Providence Hospital. She's in her 90s and suffers from dementia. She witnessed what happened at the house. Afterwards, she was agitated and had nightmares. Then she had a major stroke. Doctors told the family she's not expected to recover. Von believes she was traumatized. He says the community's support has been comforting, but he still can't make sense of how he and his family found themselves in the middle of this nightmare caused by a stranger who happened to pick their window to crawl into.
A new coalition has formed in Anchorage in support of immigration reform. According to Felix Rivera, who is a member of the AFL-CIO and a spokesman for Alaskans for Immigration Reform, there are about 11,000 undocumented immigrants in Alaska. The group hosted a small street demonstration in front of the offices of Senator Mark Begich and Senator Lisa Murkowski in Anchorage at noon today to urge the senators to support immigration reform.
Aside from a pathway to citizenship, we want to make sure that we keep our borders secure and that we keep families together. That's really important. It's really the right thing to do, is to keep families together and also realizing that immigrants contribute to our society. They're not here to get a handout. They come here to work. They come here to better themselves and better their families.
Rivera says all three members of Alaska's delegation have signed a letter in support of reform. The Immigration Modernization Act is scheduled for Senate floor debate in Washington, D.C. next week. Daniel Esparza, a member of Anchorage's Hispanic community, belongs to the union Unite Here, which is affiliated with AFL-CIO.
We applaud the effort that we are very close to make history. And right now we believe this is the year and this is the time to do it.
Joelle Hall, also with AFL-CIO, says having a workable path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants is important for all workers.
It's very important to the working men and women of this country that workers who come to this country to work are treated fairly and that they have pay and protections on the job that protect them, but also protect the pay and the conditions of the American worker.
Paul says the immigration reform movement is not about unions. It's about protecting workers.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering that public transportation can benefit their businesses and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, and social opportunities. There's more information at alaskamobility.org. This message sponsored by the nonprofit organizations Alaska Mobility Coalition and the American Public Transportation Association. Complete a bachelor program without leaving home. Whether a first-time or a transfer student, the University of Alaska Southeast has the degree for you. Visit ketch.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
NPR's Puzzle Master, Will Shortz, will be taping his weekly puzzle for Weekend Edition from Anchorage, where he's exercising his other passion, table tennis. Anchorage is the second stop of a 7-day table tennis tour in Alaska that Shortz is taking with Caribbean table tennis champ Robert Roberts. Last night, Shortz was in Juneau, where he talked with KTOO's Lisa Fu.
Will Shortz mastered the skill of puzzles early in his life. His first puzzle was published when he was just 14. He became a regular contributor to Dell Puzzle Publications at 17 and has been the crossword editor for New York Times since 1993. But being a puzzle master isn't enough. Shortz wants to master table tennis.
My ultimate goal is to be national champion for my age. Whatever age that is. If I do it in my 60s, fantastic. 70s, 80s, 90s, doesn't matter. Someday, I want to be champion for my age.
Shortz is 60 years old. To be national champion in table tennis, one has to win the U.S. Open Table Tennis Championship, which has divisions for every age group. The next U.S. championship will be in Las Vegas this July.
I'm not going this year because I'm not good enough, but someday.
When asked when he will be good enough, Shorts laughs a bit.
I guess it's like art. I'll know it when I see it.
Shorts is coming close to fulfilling another table tennis dream, to have the greatest club possible. In 2011, he opened the Westchester Table Tennis Club in Pleasantville, New York, with friend, coach, and Caribbean table tennis champion Robert Roberts. With 18 tables, it's the largest table tennis facility in the country. Shorts' club is gaining recognition both nationally and internationally. Recently, 15-year-old Kai Zheng from China joined the club.
He's a champion for his age in Beijing. He moved to Pleasantville to play at our club because he idolizes Robert and he loves our club.
Zheng is already ranked number one for players under age 21 and is ranked 5 in the U.S. overall. Shorts' table tennis schedule in Alaska is tight. He's visiting 6 towns in 7 days, Juneau, Anchorage, Homer, Soldotna, Eagle River, and Fairbanks. And he'll be playing table tennis each night, which fulfills 2 more goals: to play table tennis every day this year and to play in every state in the union. Alaska is number 40. But table tennis is not the only thing on Shorts' Alaska agenda. He's tailored 2 puzzles for his time here. One based on Homer, which will air this Sunday on NPR's Weekend Edition, and one he made especially for Fairbanks. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Author and historian Jean Morgan Moe lived in Alaska during the hectic and heady days of oil pipeline construction. She returned to her native Louisiana after many years here, but has never forgotten her adopted state. Moe will travel through Alaska later this month to promote her book, In Pursuit of Alaska, a collection of accounts of some of the earliest visitors to the Great Land, starting with John Muir. She says she got the idea for the anthology many decades ago when she visited the rare book collection at the UAA library and found a book full of unique stories.
And so here were these incredible stories that really no one that I knew anything about. And many of them are people who traveled to Alaska who didn't stay and then went back home again, but they wrote about Alaska. And Alaska was so unusual and so unknown that most Americans didn't know anything about it. And these people started writing these things. The country didn't have really a concept of Alaska. People started writing about it, and then people wanted to read about it, especially once the Gold Rush stories started coming out. But the tourists, too. Muir went to Alaska at a time when no one went. Muir planned to stay a month. He stayed 5 because he loved it so much. Went home because he couldn't find anyone to travel with him anymore, and then was back the following summer. And when he wrote about it, people read these stories and were inspired to go. The tour companies started offering tours, largely because of Muir's writing. And so even for the tourists to go, it was a different thing. They were so, their stories were so unusual that when they went back home, they were invited to speak places.
Do you have a favorite anecdote? Which one? Go ahead.
It's like a mother with her children, right? There's a writer named Robert Dunn that I'm just absolutely crazy about. Dunn was really a different person, and he wrote a book called The Shameless Diary of an Explorer, which is about an attempt in 1903 to reach the summit of Mount McKinley. Well, he was 26 when he found out that there was an expedition that was going to try to climb Mount McKinley. He was working in New York as a reporter, writing, he says, potboilers, and his editor was a man you've probably heard of named Lincoln Steffens. And Lincoln Steffens hooked him up with this guy named Frederick Cook, and Cook was going to try to climb McKinley. So Dunn joins the expedition. He comes to Alaska, and Cook was just this terribly inept leader of an expedition. But they finally got to McKinley, and Cook had said, he said, look, Don, it won't be a problem. We can get up McKinley at the rate of 5,000 feet a day. And they start up the mountain. And, you know, nobody knew how you were going to get up the mountain. But I don't think very many people had tried to climb McKinley. They start up the mountain, and they finally get to a place where they're standing on an 11,000-foot knife edge. and they look down. They can't go forward. They know they can't go up anymore, and the summer's running out. Their food's running out, so they have to quit. And Dunn's book, Shameless Diary of an Explorer, the first line is, this is the story of a failure. I mean, who could not love a book that says this is the story of a failure? And it's just a grand story.
Now, let's get to the photos a bit. Most of them, I would assume, came from UAF's archives.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. I wrote the first draft of this book in 83 and 84. And when I was doing that, the only pictures that were available to me were microfilm. And most of the pictures that are in the book, I selected before I left Alaska. When I came back, I had a cardboard box with the draft of the manuscript, and I had prints of the photographs that I wanted to be in the book. Many of those photographs have now been digitized, and the Alaska Digital Archives, as you know, is just this incredibly lovely thing with thousands and thousands of photographs that you can just pour over. And so there were, I substituted a few and I chose a few more, but the picture on the cover is one that came from those old days. And I just, the photographs were so much fun to look at, because how can you look at those people and not want to know what was their story? Who were these folks?
What is it about Alaska that has that mystique that people seem to, you know, Jack London called it the call of the wild?
I think there's a certain kind of person. I can talk to people about Alaska. You have to have a curious mind. You have to be a curious person. You have to want to know. You have to be looking. And you can talk to people, and in 10 minutes, you can know whether this is a person who's going to be interested in Alaska or not. And I think it's that curiosity. I think it's that sense of wanting to know, of wanting to discover, of being alive. That's the kind of people who go to Alaska.
Jean Morgan Moe is the editor of In Pursuit of Alaska, an anthology of travelers' tales from 1879 through 1909. Moe will finish up her statewide tour by speaking at the Anchorage Museum of History and Art on July 8th. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Julia O'Malley and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources. As an active senior, your independence is important to you. One of the ways for you to maintain your independence is to reduce your risk of falling. A fall risk assessment can be part of your initial or annual Medicare exam. They'll ask about your vision and review your medications for possible problems. Learn ways to improve balance, strengthen muscles, and reduce hazards at home. Contact your Medicare provider for an appointment. This message in good health is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.